Hello, and welcome to the Off-Kilter Quilt. My name is Frances. I'll be your hostess. Hello, and welcome to episode 166, the Summer Has Begun episode. School, last day of school, Tuesday, June 2nd. The boys have done nothing but fart around ever since. Excuse my French. They get, like, the week after school's out, they're good to do. They can do computer games. They can fry their brains out on Netflix. Do people really fry their brain? Nobody fries their brains out on Netflix. But, you know, just screens. They can do all the screens they want, not making them go exercise, not making them do any chores. That all stops tomorrow. All stops tomorrow. Serious limits, particularly on the Wilsters' screen time. Yes. But we have some fun projects planned, and I am upping our gym membership across the street to the family membership, so Jack can go work out every day, which he's going to do. But I'm hoping for a good summer. I'm always very hopeful at this time of summer. I always have big plans. I'll tell you what my big plan is for me and Will to get on the train. There is an Amtrak train that goes from here to Wilson, North Carolina, which is east, where there is a great Whirligig museum in the making, but I think you can still go visit now, although it's not done. My friend Jeff Curry is the curator. The artist Wallace Simpson died a couple years ago. And there are other things in Wilson as well, but the train costs like $17 to get over there. It's like an hour trip. I love trains. I would love to travel more on the train. I'm very excited because we're going to get some light rail here in the next few years in this area. And I'll ride that all the time. But I want to take the train to Wilson and also to Charlotte. I'm hoping I can convince my mother-in-law to drive down to the train station and meet us. And then me and Melvin and Will could just go wander around downtown Charlotte a little bit. I don't know if she will or not, but that's my hope. So Jack's going to be gone to camp, and he doesn't do stuff with us. So that's why the focus is on me and Will taking trains. I'll let you know if that happens. I want to let you know that there are things on the blog you need to see. In fact, we've got two blog posts over at theoffkilterquilt.wordpress.com. And the first is a guest post by the wonderful Ellen from Scotland, who went to Paducah in April. And she wrote about it. You know, said, oh, let me know how, you know, give me a report. And she did. I'm calling them the Paducah Diaries. And so there's a whole post with Ellen's experience and her pictures. Well, some of the pictures, Ellen, Ellen sent me pictures, but it was easier to actually get pictures online of, say, winning quilts from Paducah. So there are pictures. It's funny. What Ellen writes is funny and neat, and there's some good stories. I hope you will read her Paducah Diaries and leave a comment for her, because I so appreciate her taking the time. And it makes me want to go to Paducah, and one day I will. This is going to happen. The other post is mine. It corresponds with this episode, episode 166. And one of the exciting things that is on that post is the link to the Uncle Eli's quilting party video. It's a 3-minute video. I'm sure I mentioned it before that the man and I were working on it. And it turned out really nicely because the man's really good at what he does. I narrate, and what I learned is narration is hard. Talking like this, not hard. I could do it for hours. I do it for hours. I repeat myself a lot, but I do it. But reading a script and trying to sound unstupid, really hard. But anyway, and I think it worked out. I practiced a lot. I did many takes, and the man did a nice job of modulating. That's not the right word, but sort of incorporating the narration into the piece, and also just listen. I hope you like it. It's neat. It's a neat thing. One of the other things you will find, or actually two of the other things you will find on the blog this week, sort of the latest work on my Dresden plate quilts. So I'm doing two, a traditional and a modern. The traditional, we're up to 9 blocks. I need to send pictures to Sherry D, and I will put, again, Sherry D's, her website if you want to quilt along it, even just try one plate. Because you could do that and make a pillow. But if you've never done it, oh, and you know the other thing I should do is post, Jay was so nice to post a link to her tutorial on the Dresden plate. And in fact, the first Dresden plate I ever made was using this tutorial. So I will try to remember to do that. So that could be a nice project. If you've never tried one, try one. It's cool. I'm enjoying it. I don't know. Yeah, I'm a little intimidated by doing 16 traditional blocks. And then all I've done are the plates. So I still have to applique them to the blocks. I think I will do machine applique. I may confer with Jay a little bit about this. I've done three modern plates, and these are just traditional plates using modern fabric. One of the things I realized, so I have this notebook where I'm taking notes, you know, when I'm reading my quilt history stuff, taking notes, and I was reading earlier this year one of Barbara Brackman's books, sort of the history of fabric. It's the second one that goes, I think, into the 50s. Anyway, and I was actually doing research for particularly for 1930s fabric. And one of the things she says is that, you know, in the 1930s, these fabrics, quilters, they weren't, there wasn't a lot of contrast options. And quilts made with 1930s fabrics, the contrast was made by using printed fabrics next to solids. That's where the contrast was. So there weren't contrasts of light and dark as much as solid and print. And I realized, you know, in my traditional Dresden, I've got prints. It's all prints. It's all ants crawling across my design wall. And I tried to do, so the contrast is colors. And to some extent, there are medium prints and small prints. And I try to contrast that way as well. Interestingly, it's with the modern plates where I'm contrasting solid and prints. So who knew? My plan is still is to do about 7 of the modern plates. And I had the idea the other day, and I'm going to try this, is my idea is to do some larger plates, what will be 16-inch blocks, and then some smaller ones. So I'm going to play with that. I think that could be interesting. We shall see. Now, what feedback I need from you is about background fabric for the traditional plates. My mother suggested, when I talked to her recently, probably on my birthday last week. My birthday was last week, yay. Navy blue. And I'm intrigued by that because, you know, the traditional plates are so busy that there's something about navy blue that seems like calming and cooling in a way. When you have that busyness, there's something almost hot about it. Not that the colors are that hot, but the activity is. So I could see that. Now, someone else I talked to about it suggested a sage green, and I'm intrigued by that. Although there are some bluish, I don't know. Anyway, take a look. If you've got some thoughts, let me know. But, you know, I have any number of quilts now. This will be a bedside quilt that I assume we'll use on our bed with the background fabric being white. And so I'm interested in what an alternate setting might be. Speaking of modern Dresdens and modernity, I mentioned in the quilt diaries, I think the second one, I think there's just two, that I have been active on the American Quilt Study Group listserv this week. What happened is on Tuesday I posted the Uncle Eli video and got some very nice response from the group, from people in the group. And somebody said, you know, I wish we were talking about this stuff. I wish we were talking more about what's going on in quilting today and about living traditions. And the fact is, this listserv, which is a big part of why I joined the group, because I wanted to be part of this amazing ongoing discussion that I anticipated, it's a very quiet listserv. There's not amazing discussion. But a couple other people kind of chimed in and said, yeah, I wish we were talking about this stuff. So, and I said, I wish we were too. You know, and there's all kinds of stuff I'd love to discuss. And somebody's like, well, let's, you know, just throw it out there. Let's see what happens. And one of the things that I've thought about, just, you know, very vaguely, but have just played around, is, you know, what are the roots of the modern quilt movement. And I talk about this, again, in the quilt diary, so I don't want to go into it too much. I don't want to repeat myself, but it was an interesting discussion. It just took over the course of a few days, and it has died down. And but it made me think, I could see, I keep talking about this website we're going to build. We are. And I just had the thought fairly recently that it's like, it should be kind of like a magazine. And I mean, just fairly recently, this thought came to me. We were talking about a couple of hours ago, because I was in Barnes & Noble, and I picked up, to look at, there's an issue, what is it called? Is it called Modern Block? Modern Quilt? It's a very expensive magazine. It's like $14.99. To be honest, if I were a little wealthier, I probably would have bought it. Or if I felt like I could have justified it for some sort of research purposes, I could have justified, I would have bought it. But instead, I sat there and I read this article by Mary Fonds about modern traditionalism. And it was okay. And I just thought, it's like sometimes you just have to write what you want to read. And I would have really liked a more in-depth article. Sometimes in Quilters Newsletter, you get that more in-depth kind of article. But this was, and as much as I really like Mary Fonds, and my guess is she could have gone into a lot more depth, because I know she's very interested in quilt history. It was a little surfacey to me. So anyway, but I thought, one of the things that maybe what I would write about, as though I were writing an article, would be about the roots of the modern quilt movement. And so I wanted to throw this out to you. For those of you, and I know some of you are so knowledgeable. All of you are very knowledgeable in your own way. But some of you are, have a lot of knowledge. If I were saying, okay, I want to write about the origins, the roots of the modern quilt movement, as well as sort of the beginnings, right? What would you suggest would be important to think about? It's like, what designers are really important? I would think Denise Schmidt would be a very important person to talk about. I would think it would be important to look into sort of art quilt movements. I would think, Gwen Marston is important. What designers, what books, what blogs, what larger design concerns do I need to think about, or art history? I mean, you guys know about this stuff. So if you've got some ideas about that, let me know. One of the things that I wrote about in this listserv discussion this week, I was talking about, the connection, and I don't, that could be explored between modern quilting and sort of what I perceive, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong, as a more of an interest in home machine quilting. Do you think there is? I just think with the rise of people, the rise of Angela Walters. She is, I think her books are great, her classes are great, and she's clearly a popular quilt person. One of the things I put out there is, like, I felt like that with modern quilts, there are certain quilts that you'll see at shows that seem to me to be mostly a canvas for the quilting. There's very little that's going on visually in those quilts besides the quilting. And I was looking at, and maybe we'll talk about this more, maybe I'll do some magazine talking in the next episode, but the most recent AQS magazine that's got the winners from Paducah. And the modern quilts are really interesting. One of them you will see in Ellen's Paducah Diaries. The winning quilt, it's beautiful, beautiful. By North Carolina quilters, by the way. This, I think, mother and daughter from Lake Junaluska in North Carolina. Beautiful quilt. But, I was looking at the third place quilt. And I just thought, it was kind of like all negative space except for three vertical strips. And at first I was just like, what? And then I realized, the picture was fairly small, but if you look really closely, there's really interesting quilting going on. And I thought, that's why it got third place. But that's the problem with magazine pictures, is you can't see that stuff. And I was thinking, magazines, they need to have centerfolds. Quilting magazines, they need to have centerfolds. So you can at least look at one quilt really closely and look at the quilting and really understand what's happening with that quilt, especially when we're talking about prize-winning quilts. And maybe I will talk about that more, because one of the things about the prize-winning quilts, they're all clearly beautiful, amazing quilts. But sometimes you ever, I don't know. I mean, the first time I looked through, I thought, especially like the best of show, incredible quilt. I think there is a picture of it on the blog, in Ellen's article. I think it's called Majestic Mosaic. And it's a gorgeous quilt. And at the same time, it felt like, oh yeah, this is the kind of quilt that wins these shows. I don't know. Do you have thoughts on that? This is going to be a super long introduction. So let me just go through here quickly and say thank you. Got lots and lots of comments. I didn't realize it's been like over 2 weeks since I posted my last thing. Sorry about that. I thought it had just been like 10 days. Okay, so heard from Gretchen. I got really a lot of Dresden love from people who had not even listened to the podcast. You know, you don't have to listen to the podcast to comment. You know that. Okay, so Gretchen. Thank you, Gretchen, who thinks my Dresden plates are adorable. Heard from Laura, but, says she watched Broadchurch and loved it. Good. Now next you have to watch Wolf Hall if you haven't yet, Laura, but I'm so glad you liked that. Heard from Pam at Hip to Be a Square. If you haven't listened to the most recent Hip to Be a Square, you need to. So you can hear Pam's boyfriend story. I so want her to make old boyfriend stories a regular part of her podcast. So, yes, and she also finds my Dresden's adorable, although she saw the preview image from the man's documentary for Anytown USA and was very disturbed by the deer, yes. It's really disturbing. I don't think, did I talk about in the Diet Quilt Diaries about actually going to see, going to see the whole thing? We had to watch like 7 documentaries, and, you know, we had to wait a long time to get to the man's work of genius. It was, I'm very proud of my children. That's all I'll say. Heard from AJ Dub. You know, it's interesting. She says, I love 30s fabrics, even though they're not really my personal style. I think a lot of people love 30s fabrics, like more in theory than in practice, definitely. And she has an antique double wedding ring quilt that is dated from the 30s to 40s by a textile historian. Please send me a picture. I would so love to see that, AJ Dub, a.k.a. Amy. Heard from Kristen, who hadn't listened yet but needed to comment on the adorable Dresdens. I think this may be called the adorable Dresden quilt. Everyone finds it adorable. They are adorable. And she wanted to know if it's wrong to knit while listening to a quilting podcast. And I say no. No, knit away. Knit away. The knitters of quilting podcast world, unite. Heard from the Allison Rosen. I love that's her tag. The Allison Rosen. And she is just a little bit behind on her podcast listening and no pressure, but on her podcast posting. Allison, want to hear from you. Heard from Barbara and Michelle and... Michelle wants to read my books. Michelle, you will. One way or the other, you will. Heard from Callie the Fifth. This is interesting. So, you know, when I'm recording this inside, when I record outside, we get a lot of bird song. And she says that her local mockingbirds no longer sing. They only imitate the crows and ravens, which have recovered from West Nile, and the hawks. Isn't that interesting? We have mockingbirds around here. They are so loud. And I'm very happy that they are providing some bird song for Kelly the Fifth. Heard from Kate from Quilting Daydreams, and she might come back. She stopped podcasting because people were complaining about the quality of her recording, and she just doesn't have time to go out and get a mic. And isn't that silly? No, Kate, I believe you have many children. That's not silly at all. But come back to us sometime, please do. Okay, heard from Sherry D. Here's the latest. Oh, and I need to put this on the episode 166 post. We have a Dresden Plate Flickr group. Okay, so I will put the link to that. So look for that from now until December 10th. Make a Dresden Plate block and share it. Come on, guys, share it. Let's do this. Let's do this thing. Okay, heard from Dorothy. She says, this is interesting, 1930s fabrics. She was obsessed with them for a while. She made a Lemoyne star quilt with them, and not quite ants. That would be my take on some 1930s quilts. Not quite ants all over, but all those pastel colors blended into one muddy mess. Yeah, I can see that happening. I hope that's not happening to mine, but it could be. And she suggests a bright yellow background. Possible, you know, I'm not a yellow person, but suddenly I'm thinking maybe I don't know, something peachy or marigoldy? I don't know. Or possibly teal or aqua for a background. Yeah, but not gray. Yeah, she says definitely not gray. And I agree. Now, it could be gray for the modern one, but not for the traditional one. Heard from Jay. Got several comments from Jay, and I will put the link to Jay's Dresden plate tutorial, as I said, up so you can go and do your Dresden plate. And Jay and I are thinking about what are we doing next for the sampler quilt. We are making some progress. Heard from Debbie, who I've been thinking about. Debbie, I've been thinking about you because I just heard that Gwen Marston is going to be at QuiltCon 2016, which is in California, as are you, and I would love to come. I would. I doubt I will, but yeah, but I have been thinking about you. Heard from Quilt and Jenny, and she suggests perhaps muslin for the background of the Dresden plate, the traditional, and someone else mentioned that to me too. So that is something that I will keep in mind. Heard from Ellen, who said she was going to wish me a happy birthday on Twitter. My birthday was last Saturday, and many of the Twilters kindly wish me a happy birthday. And she left me a comment instead because she knows how much I love comments. Thank you, Ellen. Heard from Melanie, who is slowly catching up with the episode. She's on episode 78. So she had not listened to the early episodes, so she thought she would. I have not listened to those early episodes in a long time. You are a good woman, Melanie. Thank you, thank you. Got several great comments from Jay, actually. And she said with the Dresden, with the traditional blocks, that I might want to include some Michael Miller ta dots. And I will look into those because I think I'm going to need to mix something up pretty soon, although I am over halfway done. Yeah, I have a feeling I'm going to need to get some more fabric and do some new things. I don't know, but I will look into that, so thank you. Jay is curious as to what happened to my notes and templates from the block you made in our class. I have them. But I guess Sherry D. had sent me a bunch of possible patterns, and we were looking for a mutual pattern, and this one is a little bigger, but I actually have printed out the forms from your templates to do these smaller blocks, so it's all there. I haven't forgotten. Heard from Emily, who is enjoying Grace and Frankie, which I am as well, and she wanted to know if I knew Annie Smith is back to podcasting, and I do. It's so good to hear from her again. I'm so glad that she is back. And then I heard from Ellen, who is on her way to France. So, Ellen, why am I not living your life? Just jet-setting around the world. Anyways, she recommends a new program called Home Fires. I have not heard of that here in the States. I will look for it, but she said it's by the same people that produce Downton. So, hey, keep an ear and eye peeled for that, everyone. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for taking the time to comment. I love hearing from you. You can comment at theoffkilterquilt.wordpress.com, or you can just email me at fdowell@nc.rr.com. Okay, this has been a really long introduction, so we better get on with the Quilt Diaries. Quilt Diary, day one. It's Wednesday, May 27th, 2015. It's about 2:46 in the afternoon. I've got about 20 minutes till it's time to go get Will. And I have very little quilting news for you because I've not really been working on my Dresden plate, either modern or traditional. I think that's because I've been working on my garden. Now, I realized I was listening to bits and pieces of my last podcast, and I think with every quilt diary, I was like, saying the exact same thing about the garden. That is a problem if you spread the quilt diaries out, if I spread them out over the course of a couple weeks. I can't remember what I said in the diary before. You'll be happy to know my perennials are planted. I found a rosemary bush, which I'm quite excited about. We had a really nice rosemary bush, two of them, when we moved in, one down by the mailbox, which was always a little suspect because you worry about dogs. And one in a shady spot further up the driveway. And rosemary does okay with partial shade. But they both died. sadly. Who knows? They could have been 20 years old. I don't know. So I had been on the lookout for a rosemary bush, and I found one at Whole Foods. So I'm excited because it's just so nice to be able to go and snip herbs. And I have to say, I'm so cheap that I just refuse to pay $3 or $3.99 for a basil plant when you can get like 100 seeds for $1.99, but I still haven't planted my basil. It's getting to the point, is like, you know, it would maybe be worth $4 to have an actual plant. But you know, basil gets woody really quickly. Yeah, but I need to do that because that is a total delight. I think if I got some planted by this weekend, I'll be okay because the tomatoes really won't be really coming in until July, although we do have a couple plants that have some fairly nice sized green tomatoes. These are from our neighbor, Mr. Eddie. He starts his indoors like in January, so he's a great, great tomato grower. He is a tomato artisan. So what to tell you? You know, it's we're getting close to the end of school, which means that everything is crazy. Will's last full day of school is tomorrow, and then they just peter out till Tuesday with some half days. And you wish you just make, you know, again, I wish they would just make them come to school for 24 hours straight and get it out of the way. Just let's do it. Let's none of this nickel and diming me to death the last few days of school. Jack starts exams on Friday. He has three exams. He wrote for his, he doesn't have a physics exam. He wrote a paper on the theory of relativity and black holes, or maybe just black holes. I don't know. I read it. It was beautiful. I didn't really understand it. It is weird and freaky to me, this child's brain, which is so little, so very little like mine. He went to Animazement last weekend in Raleigh. That's the big convention. I think it goes from town to town. And, you know, it's so funny. I don't dress up, I mean, in costumes. I don't dress up, period, but certainly I don't put costumes on and feel very self-conscious. I feel self-conscious wearing a hat, and partly that's because I have a super big head. I actually was in Target the other day, and they had hats on sale, summer hats. I thought, you know, I should really wear a hat in the garden, and I went and put on some hats, and it was just so dumb looking. I'm just going to sunscreen the top of my head. But yeah, so I don't do dress up very well. And Jack did not dress up. He decided at the last minute. For the last 2 years, last year and the year before, he actually asked for an Animazement ticket for his birthday and received one. But this year, I don't know, I guess he was thinking he wouldn't go, and the last minute found out some friends were going, and I think he had a great time. But it is neat. You go, when I dropped him off, and I dropped him off last year too, and all these kids, you know, so they're into anime and Japanese culture and just general funkiness, and they dress up and they look fabulous. And it makes me really happy to see these kids who, you know, wherever they're from, you know, they were young, probably high school and college kids, that they're, you know, I mean, the geeks will rule the world. And I think we all understand that now. It's very different. You know, and for those of us who grew up pre-Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, who I always want to call Steve Jobs, you know, we didn't understand that. Now we do. And these kids, they know it, and they have this confidence. They have a tribe. They get in their tribes at school and online, and they're going to rule the world, and they're having fun, and they dress up. And I love seeing it. I do. I just love when people can be free and creative and have fun, even though I cannot freely have fun in the way that they do. Sorry, little frog in my throat. I think I paused that to cough it out, but yeah, like a hairball. Don't worry. Just keep moving. Nothing to look at here. So Animazement, Jack, exams, into school. And choppy, choppy, choppy. So I actually started working on a new book that's in the series of early readers that I'm doing. And I did. I worked on it for like a good hour yesterday, which is really not a long time. When I'm starting stuff out, sometimes I really just start in dribs and drabs, and then I work up until I'm working 3 or 4 hours a day on it. I can't do more than that. But then today I'm working on this grant, another grant for the same project I've been working on for this traveling photography exhibit. And now this, we're asking for money from Duke Power, who should give us every dime and more. I don't know if they will or not. But anyway, so I've been working on that. And then also starting to do research on funding for this other project we want to do at NC Folk called STEAM Quilts, which I've talked about before. STEAM being science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. Is that STE? Did I get everything? I think so. And, you know, I've done this kind of work for NC Folk for a long time, and I don't know what it is about sitting in front of a computer and trying to track down grants, the appropriate grants for your project. It's just kind of, I don't know, it just kind of hollows you out. I don't know why that is. I think staring intently at a screen, I think it's also you go down a lot of dead-end roads. You think you found this great source of funding for your program, and then you realize, wait a minute, it's only funding for Allegheny, Pennsylvania. You know, you're like, ah, man. So that's what I did today. I did grant work, and now I'm exhausted. I think, you know, it's a good tired. I'm feeling like a used up tired because I have been spreading mulch and carrying huge bags of mulch around my garden, and then also trying to be good about the gym. So, and today I told myself I was going to go lift weights, but I'm not. So, quilty-wise, oh, I was going to tell you, I did have a bit of quilting, not news, but something I want to mention. I don't know how you are. Where are we on quilting magazines these days? What do you subscribe to? What do you like? Now, I picked this up at the last Quilt Guild meeting. It's the most recent issue, to my knowledge, the June 2015 issue of American Patchwork and Quilting. And, you know, sometimes I pick it up, sometimes I don't. I generally do like this magazine. But, you know, I get tired of, you know, it's like those sort of mainline women's magazines like Family Circle and Women's Day, which I don't read. I used to read all the time. I don't anymore because they're really aimed at 30-year-old moms. And, you know, and I'm tired of 30-year-old. So I'm like, yeah, enough of you. No, but you know, it's just kind of like all the pictures are, you know, all the models, all the men are wearing fedoras and have beards and whatever. And I'm just like, nah, not for me anymore. But you know how they always like lose 5 pounds walking, walk off the weight. It's all walk off the weight. Every headline on these magazines is walk off the weight. I'm like, you're not going to walk off the weight. Maybe if you're 30 and you walk really fast, you can walk off a little bit of the weight. But yeah, don't get your hopes up high about walking off the weight. But that's every. And so in the same vein with quilting magazines, it's like quilt fast. Fast, scrappy quilts. You know, speedy, scrappy quilts. Make a quilt really, really fast. And also organize your stash. Those are the two things. Make a quilt as scrappy, fast quilt this weekend and organize your stash. I'm like, can we have some articles about something else, please? Because I don't even really, such a uninteresting stash. And yeah, it does not, which is not to say, it's pretty scrappy. So, it does need some organizing right now. But I don't need to read 20 million articles on organizing my stash. And in the same way, I'm you know, a slow quilter. I understand why some people, why the got to do it fast, because you know, you just don't have the time. And I do have time, so I'm going slow. So those, I just see those, and they just make me tired. It's like, tell me something new. But this one, this is the big color issue, and it has a really great, and it does have Succeed at Scrappy, yes. But the main thing is it's your guide to choosing fabric. And there's this great article with Weeks Ringel. She didn't write it. Somebody else wrote the article, but so went to Weeks Ringel and with her stash and did some, and talked about color issues, about how to choose fabrics. And I think it's maybe within the same article. It's also looking at fabric combinations. I just thought it was very useful. I wish the photographs had been a little bigger. Sometimes they were a little confusing. But I just felt like, wow, this is really a wealth of interesting and useful information. So if you're looking for a magazine, American Patchwork and Quilting, As you know, quilty's gone is on its last, not on its last legs. It's last issue, and which is too bad. And I wish I knew the story behind that because it is, you know, it wasn't available via subscription. So it's just, and so I don't know. I mean, obviously Mary Fonds, you know, Fonds and Porter was putting it out. Mary Fonds was the editor. I thought it was lovely. You know, obviously very focused on the beginner, but that's okay because, you know, why not? I think that's part of Mary Fonds' passion is to get, you know, beginners into quilting and to not make it too formidable a prospect. Like, here, you can do this. Come on in. So I'm sorry to see that go. And, you know, Generation Q, I like. I wish I could find it on the newsstand. I haven't been able to, so I've ordered a couple issues, and I've liked it. I guess I'm still, you know, Quilter's Newsletter. Although you know, American Patchwork and Quilting and Fonds and Porter, it just depends on what mood I'm in, whether or not I'm going to pick those up. So that's my thoughts on magazines. But I really do feel this one, the June 15th of American Patchwork and Quilting, is worth your, what is it? Is worth your $5.99 if you are so inclined to spend a little money on magazines this month. What else to tell you? We had the big premiere last night in Durham of the man's documentary called Bird in Hand. Unfortunately, it was part of, there were all six other documentaries, and only, wow. So, as I explained, I believe my last episode, that the man took a class, it's called Anytown USA. And there were six other people in the class, and Robbins, North Carolina, home of John Edwards, was the focus of the class. And as you might expect, there were variations in the quality of the film submitted. But what they, on Saturday, no, Friday, they actually showed the films in Robbins. And they did it outside in the ballpark. And they had a huge inflatable screen that they put up. And this is hilarious considering that this is done by the Center for Documentary Studies, albeit via the continuing ed program. They neglected to bring an all-important wire but to hook up the computer to the projector. And so the show got started an hour and a half late, by which time people were tired and it was starting to get cold. And having now sat through all seven movies myself, I can just imagine what it was like if I'd had to actually sit through an hour and a half of just milling around before the movies even started. So anyway, the man's movie was, no, you know, obviously I'm biased, but it was really good. So there was actually three good movies, and I think the man's was the best in terms of if you just took everything together, just the quality of the filmmaking, the arc of the story, and the man had great music because one of his guys, I may have mentioned this, Ben, who's a musician, one of his guys. I mean, he's this guy who works for him, but it's a very small office, and they're all, although the man, believe me, is in charge, they're all pretty, they get along, their crew. And Ben's a musician, and he did the music. And he did a great job. In fact, he got people were coming up afterward. There were like some production companies who came in last night, came and gave Ben their cards and said we should work together. So I think a number of people. So I think if nothing else, this generated more work for Ben, which is great. But so the man, he gets the number one prize. But there was another one that, was very charming, and I think the big crowd pleaser. And then a third, which was about, there's a Catholic church. It's a Spanish language Catholic church. The town is now half Mexican. And one of the filmmakers did a documentary on three of the women, and it was beautiful. It was just beautifully shot. And so three of the seven movies were good, and four were excruciating. And And we had to wait till the man's movie was shown number six, and then the second really, really good movie was seventh. So, which was smart because I think people left feeling good, perhaps forgetting the pain of sitting through the first four. Oh, good Lord, they just went on. It's amazing. It's amazing. You know, I mean, you see this actually watching Hollywood movies, how people, it's an art to be able to tell a story in whatever medium you choose. And, you know, I think a lot of Hollywood movies are getting to the point where they're incoherent. And there's probably too many hands in the pot, stirring the pot, or actually in the pot, probably, you know, severed hands floating around, and that's part of the problem. But, yeah, to be able to structure a story, which, you know, is says the novelist, it's not as easy as it looks. But in some ways, that's such a basic thing. And that was the problem with the movies that weren't good, is they didn't know how to tell a story. So, and of course, I came out of there with the same thought I have about so many things, which is everybody needs an editor. And I was thinking about, can we apply that to quilting? Do quilters need editors? I mean, to some extent, yes. And so many of us work alone. You know, it's one of the myths of quilt making is that it's this very communal activity, but it's really not. And I don't think it ever has been. I think in the past, some aspects were much more communal, for instance, the quilting. But even then, you know, the quilt maker tended to draw the quilting marks and say, this is how I want it quilted. So she was more like the director of a film, right? And then she created the story of the quilt, and then took chalk and said, follow these chalk lines and don't deviate from this pattern. This is how I want it done. But up until that point, for the most part, the quilt had been her work only. And nowadays, you know, I don't know. I certainly have not. I don't know anyone who's gathered together for a quilting bee in which the other people have helped her hand quilt her quilt. I mean, the experience can be communal if you are working with a long armor. But even then, you're not. It's not like you're sitting in the same room. You go to the long armor and say, "Here's my quilt," and you. I assume I've never done this, but that you kind of talk about some ideas, and then she does that work and gets it back to you, which is it's also an economic exchange. So that's all very different. So I do think quilters tend to work alone, and you know, I was thinking about the quilts that I saw just, you know, a couple week before last. So, you know, at the Quilt Guild meeting for show and tell, and it's so interesting. All the quilts were nice. But yeah, there were quilters. Certainly, I think in terms of color, we can use editors, particularly as beginners when we're still trying to figure that all out. That is really an art, and it's one of the things too. And I'm going to finish up here because I've got to go get Will. And this new American Patchwork and Quilting magazine is one of the things I think they do, and I'm sure other magazines do this as well. But they, for every quilt pattern, they show three color options, which I think is great. And I think that's a great way to learn about color, to see how dramatically different quilts look with different color, color choices, color arrangements. As you know, and I think I talked about this in the last episode, you know, at the Quilt Guild meeting, and there was this bee from Hillsborough, and they were showing quilts. They'd all used the same pattern, but had done their own colors, and how dramatically different some of those quilts were, even though they were made in the exact same pattern. So So yes, do we need editors? Yes, because an editor, and I know this from my own work with an editor, my editor Caitlin at Simon & Schuster, is a teacher. I mean, I think that just if you're open to it, if you're open to being edited, and you're open to really listening, you learn so much, and then you apply it to the next book, or as quilters, we apply it to the next quilt. And so, of course, you're always going to learn, and the more experienced you get, the better choices you're going to make. So, but yes, certainly at the beginning, we all need editors. Yes. So anyway, that is where we are right now. No quilty progress, but still always thinking about quilts. All right, I shall be back one of these days soon. Quilt Diary Day 2. It is Wednesday, June 3rd, the first day of no school. School is out for the summer. and we are glad. I'm sitting on the porch. It is an overcast day, a little rainy. We're hoping that more rain is going to come. Will is supposed to have a baseball game tonight, and we would like it to get rained out. I know, terrible parents. Even Will wants it rained out, too. And partly that's because Will has two birthday parties today. The first one he is at right now, Henry's. Henry is new this year, has been embraced. I have to say that Will's class, the sixth grade class of Durham Academy, has a group of the nicest boys you could ever hope for your son to be among. It's a really, I'm sure they're less nice boys. In fact, I know there are less nice boys, but there's this group of boys. They're all smart and try to get good grades and are athletic, and they're just nice. And Will, his core buddies, who I've talked about for years, are Gavin and Wynn, but there's another circle around, you know, I mean, they're all kinds of interconnecting circles, which is kind of, so Sean and Ashank are really good friends, and they're really good friends with Will and Gavin and Wynn, and Henry is new this year, and he has been embraced because he's nice, and he's smart, and he's athletic, and that's what it takes to be in this. That's it. If you're nice and smart and you like sports, you're in. So I feel really fortunate. You know, Jack's class, the class of 2018? Is that right? So Jack, 2017. Oh my goodness, that's really weird. Yeah, Jack will graduate from high school in 2 years. It doesn't seem to me such a nice class, and I've had teachers over the years kind of suggest that the class of 2017 in some ways is kind of a dud class, and I believe it. Jack is not a dud, and he has some really nice friends, particularly now that he's at the upper school, but some of these friends were imported from other schools, which happens in ninth grade. You get all these kids coming from the private schools and some of the public schools, but some of the private schools that end at eighth grade, and it's great because they're all super smart, because you have to be super smart to get into the school at ninth grade. So that worked out for Jack really well. But what's working out for Will really well is this really nice group of kids. Anyway, so he's at Henry's birthday party, and then at 3 is Ashank's birthday party. Now, Will's got to be at his game, should it not rain, and the game is played at 5. But he still wants to go to Ashank's from 3 to 4, which is fine. It's just kind of, it's like, come on, people, it's the first day of summer. And the parties are fine, but we could just do without the baseball game. Although I have to say, it's like 60 degrees. So on the other hand, it's a really good, nice night for a baseball game. Now, you know, I do not complain about the weather, but it has been, and this is not a complaint, it's just an observation. It has been hot for this time of year. Typically, I think the average temperature this part of June, beginning of June, is like 83 degrees. And it's been in the 90s. And you forget, you have to get acclimated to that heat. You forget when when that heat hits you, it's like you're just tired. You know, the last couple of weeks I have felt tired. I'm like, why is it? It's like, 'cause it is so hot. But now it's 60 and overcast, and it's supposed to be for the next week or so in the typical temperature range, which is nice. I need to get a lot of work done before the heat comes back. In any event, so here we are, first day of summer, me and Trav on the porch. I hope he doesn't start barking. His ears are at alert. He hears something that's interesting to him. He's a good dog. Where I am quilting-wise, I am back to work on the Dresden plates. And I tell you, yet last night was the first time, I think, in 2 weeks. And mostly that's because of the garden. Just getting that in. It is all in. I may have just said that in the last quilt diary. I am going to plant some okra. We ended up having one spot left over. The man is just doing 3 quadrants of corn, 2 equal-sized quadrants, and then 1 big one, which probably means they're not actually quadrants, because quadrants suggest some, 4 equal spots, and we don't have that. So I think in the leftover space, I'm going to plant some okra. It's a little late for planting the okra, but I have to tell you, the okra is a beautiful plant. It produces these flowers that are like small magnolia blossoms. It's really pretty. So I am going to plant okra, and I think I still haven't put in my basil. I need to do that. Now that the weather has cooled down a little bit, I'll get that done. But it's pretty much in. So back to the quilting. I now have, I think I have 6 or 7 plates constructed, not the blocks, just the plates, and then maybe 3 or 4, I think, plates where I've got the petals cut and ready to be sewn together. This is of the traditional Dresden, and then I have one modern plate sewn together, and now I have 2 others cut and ready to sew. And I'm really thinking I'm going to do 7 modern plates, in part because I'm ready to put a quilt together and get quilting on it. And it's going to be a long time before I get that traditional one put together and even close to the sewing machine for quilting. So I miss quilting. Machine quilting. Well, let me tell you about what's been going on the last day. This has been interesting to me. As you may recall, I am a member of the American Quilt Study Group, AQSG. I cannot for the life of me keep those letters straight, so AQSG. I'm a member. And I used some of my Christmas money, and I joined with the idea that there would be interesting discussions about quilt culture and quilt history on the forum, and there really have not been. And it's, you know, when you join a new group like that, particularly someone, I'm not really a quilt, I'm interested in quilt history, I'm interested in quilt culture, I have some knowledge, but not a deep knowledge, I'm still learning. So, you don't want to be the new kid who's like raising her hand all the time, going, hey, let's talk about this, let's talk about that. But at the same time, I'm a little bit like, hello, this is costing $75 a year, and what I'm going to get is 1 journal and 4 newsletters. That's like really, really steep. So I just kind of feel like, come on, let's talk. Let's get this going. So today's Wednesday. So Monday I posted the Uncle Eli's quilting party video to the site, and I got some really nice responses to it. And a couple people said, I wish we were, this is really neat. This is the kind of work we need to be doing. I wish we were talking about these sort of, these living traditions and talking about what's going on in quilting today. Because from the little bit that I've explored the forum archives, a lot of it is really focused on quilt history, although I had this revelation. It's not called the American Quilt History Study Group. It's called the American Quilt Study Group, which means anything about quilting. So a couple of people said that, and they referred to another list, which I think is the American Quilt History List, or Quilt History List. I think it's just Quilt History List. And it costs, I think, $15 a year. But people were suggesting that it has not been very active as of late. But apparently there was more discussion over there at one time. But now there's not a lot of discussion anywhere. So given that people were saying, there's not, talking about this list, and someone actually posted, it's like, we pay a lot of money to be a part of this. I think partly suggesting is, it's like we need to get a little bit more for our buck. And I think it was saying it's too bad this list actually isn't open to the public, because then we might get more discussion in general. But, and I said something, said, I would love for there to be more discussion. I've been disappointed by how quiet the list is. And, there are all kinds of things I can think of to discuss. It's like I'd love to have a discussion about the modern quilt movement and what are its roots and what's going on with that and blah, blah, blah. And somebody said, well, why don't you start a discussion? So I did yesterday. And what I did is I copied from the Modern Quilt Group, the Modern Quilt Guild website, what they wrote. What someone wrote, someone who sadly not a very good writer, wrote about kind of the history of the modern quilt movement, how it came about. And so I copied that and said, all right, so here's what it says on the website. And then I took a few things out of that to discuss. And what did I talk about? There was a very, in this, I should link to it. There's a very confusing statement about how modern quilts were made throughout the 20th century, and that's not really true, and I don't think that's what the author was trying to say. I think the author was saying there are quilts that incorporate some of the same components of of the modern quilt aesthetic. I said it much, much better than that, but it's not that modern quilts have not been made throughout the 20th century. They weren't, there was no modern quilt movement, but quilts that are improvisational were made throughout the 20th century. There's a very strong history of African-American improvisational quilts and string quilts. You could look at Amish quilts, certainly have elements of what we think of now as modern quilting. So I talked about that, and I talked about how, what are the roots of modern quilts. And of course, the piece on the Modern Quilt Guild site talked about G's Bend and talked about Denise Schneider. Is that the right name? Or Snyder? It's Denise Snyder. You know who I'm talking about. I guess I'll link. But how she, in a 1998 article that appeared in Martha Stewart Living, defined her aesthetic as chic and modernist. And I suggested that, she might have been influenced by such things as Robert Hughes's book on the Amish and their quilts. That was a really important book. It came out in 1990. And, I don't know if it really influenced her or not, but, just trying to, let's unpack the roots. Was it really G's Bend, or can we look at even earlier elements? And I talked about Gwyn Marston, who I think is very important to the modern quilt movement, both in sort of the improvisational piecing that she encourages, but also the fact that she's very much like, don't worry so much about precision. Don't worry so much about sewing. So it's just cut stuff up and sew it together in ways that you find pleasing. And given that, so many young quilters, and really quilters under, maybe under 60, but certainly I would say under 50 and definitely under 40, don't grow up learning how to sew, And I could have grown up learning how to sew because my mother sewed, and she tried to teach me on occasion, bless her heart. But even that, I took home ec, and I'm sure we did some sewing in home ec. But I think that was really, this was in the late 70s, right? And that was getting to the end of the home ec era. And it was also at a time where more and more women were working. And so even if your mom might have known how to sew, but how much time did she have to teach you to sew? So again, so a lot of people, and certainly, younger quilters in their 20s and 30s. I think a good number of them probably did not grow up learning to sew, certainly was not expected that they would. And so to have someone like Gwyn Marston saying, don't worry about it. Don't worry about, precise stitches and even stitches and getting everything lined up just right. You needed a teacher and a gatekeeper who was saying, come on in. So I think Gwyn Marston is hugely important to modern quilting. So anyway, so there's a couple things I wrote about. Oh, the other thing, because there's the statement in the Modern Quilt Guild page, and again, I'll try to remember to link to it, talks about how, essentially makes a statement, and it's really not grammatically put together very well. Basically saying part of the modern quilt aesthetic is influenced by a more sophisticated design style that we started seeing in the culture at large, which I think is basically saying Isaac Mizrahi started designing for Target. I mean, really, I think that what that statement is saying, Target suddenly started getting good designers in and had good design. And if you're my age, you remember when Target was kind of like Roses. I don't know if you have a Roses where you are, just kind of a subpar Kmart. And really was that for a long time. And I think it was in the 90s really started changing. I also remember when the Gap was just a store you would walk in and there were stacks of Levi's and Wranglers, stacked to their way, but that was it. I don't think there were T-shirts, right? Just jeans. But Target certainly was nothing special, and suddenly somebody really smart got in charge and said, let's bring in good designers. And I do think that did educate maybe your basic middle class suburban folks about clean design and good design. I don't know if it it's hard to say, and I felt like and the statement that from the American Quilt Guild or the Modern Quilt Guild is along the lines of basically Americans became more sophisticated about design, and that fed into the modern quilt movement. Although I think that's a problematic statement, because traditional quilts are not unsophisticated design. you know. But I think more you're saying the eye sometimes needs to be educated to be prepared for new trends. So if you have, and there is something, I don't know. Anyway, it was a problematic statement, which I kind of understood and kind of get and kind of agree with, except for the fact that it seems to sort of be dismissive of other design styles, you know. So it's like, and believe me, there are some modern quilts which are incredibly well designed and stunning, and there are others that the design really is not that sophisticated. And usually it's like the work of younger quilters, newer quilters, who really come into quilting via modern quilt making. One, because they do like that aesthetic, right? But also because it's doable. You know, anyone can put together a very simple modern quilt. It's not going to be the best quilt, the best constructed quilt, or the most eye-catching quilt, but you can do it in the same way you can't just walk in and do a Lone Star quilt or a double wedding ring, right? That's not, you have to build up to that. So anyway, so I threw that out there. I'm getting some response, and I'm trying to respond to some of the response. It's, you know, I don't know. We will see if the discussion, and I keep trying to throw out different things to talk about and think about from, you know, but we'll see if how many people get interested or respond or have something to say. But a couple of people are like, oh, I'm really glad you brought this up. So, but you know, you kind of, so I'm going to push it a little bit. I mean, I have 100 things I would love to discuss, but other people have to join in. You know, and so I mean, I'm happy to kind of push things a little bit, but at some point it's like, well, you know, and people are responding, so I should be saying no. You know, several people have responded, so we'll see. We'll see if we can get some discussions going. So that's part of my quilty life. Other things to tell you, man, I'm reading about 20 different books. It's really insane. So last weekend was my birthday. Yay! Thank you to the twilters. Someone got caught hold of the notion that it was my birthday and got a lot of twilting birthday wishes, good birthday wishes, so thank you very much. My birthday was Saturday. I turned 51, which is not as exciting or dramatic as turning 50. It's kind of boring. And but I had a very nice birthday. There was a symposium over at UNC at the Friday Center, which is actually their continuing ed center, which is a bit off campus. It's actually a couple miles off campus, and unfortunately a location that's really convenient to me and has good parking. But there was a symposium called North Carolina Cornucopia, and it was about, well, supposedly about North Carolina foodways, but really it was about the foodways of the Southeast. Only a few, I went to a few panels, and only a couple people really kept their discussion, their remarks, but really focused on North Carolina. But it was interesting. I went Friday afternoon. I went to a panel on 17th and 18th century cooking. I was going to say North Carolina, and two of the speakers actually did focus on North Carolina cooking. One of whom was a friend of mine, a folklorist named Jeff, who is he's Lumbee, which is a Native American tribe, although not federally recognized. But he did a really great job of talking about Native American foodways and the importance of corn in the Southerner's diet, and how that's really a native plant that the Native Americans taught Europeans how to cook and how to use, and you know, corn and cornmeal stores very well. It stores a lot longer, say, than wheat, and so it's really hugely important. Especially in a part of the country that for a long time was very poor, particularly after the Civil War. Anyway, and one woman who was quite interesting, talked about slave food, and she's actually so and she's African American and does historical reenactments of an enslaved cook. And so talks about hearth cooking and open fire cooking, and she, I mean, in some ways she just talked about herself and what she grew up eating, and how that's changed. She grew up in the South, and I hate to tell you, I can't remember now where, maybe Georgia, but the sort of how she grew up in a farming community, and the kind of feasts they would have, and the family gatherings and what have you, and how that has all changed as sort of as people and their family no longer farm. But so it was interesting discussion. I would have liked to actually learn more about slave cooking and more about
So in North Carolina, but I still, she was quite a good speaker and fun to listen to. So I went to some other panels. The man went with me on Saturday to see a panel on, I can't even remember what it's called, but I really wanted to go to see two people in particular. One, Adrian Miller, who wrote a book that came out last year or the year before on soul food, and he's a really good speaker and funny and interesting. And then Emily Wallace, who is a folklorist who lives in this area and has written a great deal on pimento cheese, one of my favorite foodstuffs. And it's good that that's who I wanted to see, because I thought it started at 3 and it actually started at 2:30, so the man and I got there late. But that was fine because we got there right as Adrian Miller was getting up to talk, and he was really good. And then Emily Wallace spoke, and we enjoyed that. And then we were really hungry for pimento cheese, and we went to Harris Teeter, and all their prepared pimento cheese costs like $6 for 4 ounces, which is totally wrong. It's unethical to, yeah, really. That's not what pimento cheese is. I don't know if you've ever had pimento cheese. I'd never had it till I met the man. But it's cheddar cheese, grated cheddar cheese mixed with mayonnaise, mustard, pimentos, small diced pimentos, and garlic, and a little bit of mustard. I think I said mustard, and a little bit of onion. And it's really good. And you make it, and then you have to let it be in sit store in the refrigerator for 24 hours for all the different flavors to mingle, and it's just wonderful. But it really started out when North Carolina got industrialized and became, and the Piedmont, the central part of the state, became known for its textile mills, and people needed l to bring lunch to work. And that's when the people kind of started eating sandwiches, because you didn't eat sandwiches at home. You had 3 hot cooked meals a day at home, but when you're going out to the mill, you need to take a sandwich. And pimento cheese, it's good, the bread sticks together and it's hearty and that sort of thing. So that was all very interesting. So that was fun, but it made me realize in a way that I'm really not a foodie. As much as I like food, and I really do like food, and the food I like a lot, like pimento cheese, deviled eggs, barbecue, all that stuff. I really do love southern cooking very much. I have to be careful because it can get really fatty, but I do love it. So, but I'm not, and I really am interested in food history and food ways and all of that. I find that fascinating. But you know, the man and I, we probably eat out at restaurants like 2 or 3 times a year. Now, I go out for lunch a lot, and he and I go out for lunch when he works at home. We go usually to this diner that's pretty close to us, and we get the same thing every time. And that's like every time I go to a restaurant, it's like, well, maybe I should try something new. And like, no, I'm going to get exactly what I always love to eat here. So, but there were people through this symposium, there were a lot of people there, not many students since the semester's over. And a lot of sort of local famous foodies were there. And people, you know, there's a lot of restaurant talk. Oh, have you tried so and so? And a lot of sort of, you know, chef worship and that kind of stuff. I realized, yeah, I'm not that into that. You know, and I do, I when the man and I eat out, we have dinner out, we tend to go to very nice places and have a very nice time, and I enjoy it, and the food is delicious. And, you know, I'm not indifferent to it. It's just not that important. It doesn't have my interest, but I am interested in what people eat and what people have eaten historically. I find all that really interesting. So I just like domestic history. I like history, clearly. But that was my birthday, and that was an interesting discovery to go, yeah, you know, I like gardening. I like tomatoes. I like tomato sandwiches, but really what the latest, newest, coolest restaurant is, I really don't care. You know, it's okay if you do. I mean, I can see it's a pleasurable, deeply pleasurable thing. And you know, if you don't have to cook, hey, even better. So the sad thing is, one of the things I got for my birthday was a grill, a gas grill. So that I, you know, I've always wanted to grill and just be able to cook outside during the summer and you know, grill corn, whatever. And so we got one. We actually got it on Memorial Day. And then Sunday night, the last day of my birthday weekend, which started Friday and ended Sunday night, really kind of Monday morning. But we fired it up and it was defective. The man came in and said, "Do you smell gas?" It was like the whole backyard smelled like gas. Something was very wrong. So we have to take it back. So that was a little sad. But otherwise, a wonderful birthday. Let's see. Where am I? See, this is the problem when I go too long between quilt diaries. It's like, have I talked about AQS? I don't know. Have I? You tell me. email me, say, no, you didn't really keep us up on AQS. Very quickly, haven't heard anything. I think I'm done with AQS. Because how am I going to do business with them now? If this is how they do business, and I realized the timing was a bit bad, and that I received the letter 2 days before Quilt Week. Okay, so, and I think that the director of publications is very new. So bad timing, but still, I'm like, I don't think there's, I can't work like this. See, I'm used to working with really professional people, and I don't feel like I'm getting that here. So yeah, I think it's over. But onward, we'll figure out what to do next. I will keep you updated. Sorry if that's a complete repeat of what I said last time, last Quilt Diary. All right, well, I'm going to finish up here, and wish you a good, where are we? Like a good weekend, but it's Wednesday. I don't know what I'm wishing. I'm just wishing you good times, good luck, good quilting. Yes. And urging you to remember that life is short, so quilt first. And I'll see you next time. Bye.